Hello and welcome to another edition of Center Circle Live. Marty Thompson and Armin Badakian with you again this week. We were just talking about movies, but yeah. I guess we should talk about soccer
We should
now.
Mention that my stunt double Brad Pitt is also here. We were talking about Once Upon a Time in Hollywood.
Yeah, I couldn't even remember the name of the movie.
Yeah, Quentin Tarantino's ninth film.
Ninth?
It was pretty amazing. He always said he was going to make nine, so now he's made nine. And now I think he'll make a 10th.
Oh, okay. Oh, so he will actually do a 10th.
I think so.
I don't know if you know this about me, Armin, but I don't watch movies.
Well, then this is a very awkward start to our podcast, Marty.
Well, that's just like part of the, you know.
Part of the whole character development. This is how you, the audience, get to know us, the hosts, a little better.
And we'll talk about Marble Olympics later. Let's talk about Calgary versus Montreal Impact here first, though. Semifinal of the Canadian Championship, Calgary. Taking down the Whitecaps, grabbing their first CPL win from a CPL team over an MLS side. And now they're facing another MLS side that is, again, just like the Whitecaps, struggling a little bit.
Yeah, coming off the back of a 6-3 loss to the Colorado Rapids, which, like, come on. It's the Colorado Rapids. Like,
Kai Kamara with a hat trick there.
Yeah, so that's bad. That's not good. So, I mean, I'm not going to say 15-0 Cavalry, but I think there's an opportunity again, just like there was against the Whitecaps, to take on a wounded MLS team that might not be in the best form of their season. It's been a weird year for Canadian soccer, actually. It's like we're seeing the CPL and dominating a large portion of the narrative, but also these three MLS teams haven't been particularly, you know, in their best form. This version of Toronto FC looks promising on paper.
And the Impact kind of look good
Impact
to start the year.
Impact or whatever.
And then,
Whitecaps are like bottom. So, I mean, it's been a weird year in the sense that, like, I think that this is another winnable game winnable series for Cavalry. It will depend on the first leg. So this time they're going to Stade Saputo. They're going for the away leg, I guess, first before they, you know, return home to Spruce Meadows. If they can get, you know, if they can get like at least one or maybe two away goals and then keep the score close, I think even a loss wouldn't be the worst thing in the world off that first leg. If they can get like a 2-0 win, oh, you're laughing at that point.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, absolutely. Samuel Piette will be out for this game, but mm-hmm. Ignacio Piatti, who made his return against York 9 and ended up kind of sinking them with that penalty, he's expected to be healthy for that one as he's kind of come back. But not having Samuel Piette is tough for the Impact, especially because we saw how influential he was in those first two legs against York 9.
Yeah, the thing with York 9 is Joe Duchara did a really good job of kind of battling with Piette. Not having him in the lineup is going to be a blow for Montreal's defensive midfield. But I think having Piatti kind of back in form, like when Piatti played against York 9, he was just getting back from injury. Mm-hmm. So I think now that he's got a couple MLS games under his belt, he'll be more threatening. And then Piatti's always played better against better defenders. Like, for some reason...
Yeah, that's true.
Yeah. For some reason, like, he's really good at breaking down, like, sturdy back lines. Like, Toronto FC, during their best defensive days, still couldn't really handle Piatti. And then you see a team like the Colorado Rapids, which, you know, not the best across the board, but I mean, enough so that, you know, he was still influential. Montreal still put up 3, even though they lost 6-3. So, I mean, I think Piatti's going to be the key player for Montreal, so much so that Cavalry might be on the back foot a little more than they'd like to be. And then you kind of reduce Piatti's possible influence in that sense anyways. But that midfield battle will be important, especially if Julian Boucher, Sergio Camargo, all these guys start together for Cavalry.
Nick Ledgerwood, big hole,
Elijah Adekugbe. So there's options and there's opportunities. It just depends on how Tommy Wheeldon Jr. sort of wants to line his guys up.
Some limited defensive options, though, for Tommy Wheeldon Jr., as we learned this past week. Dean Northover out for the season with an ACL tear, and then Joel Waterman won't be back for this game a couple weeks with a damaged toe. But Northover had a great season, I thought, through the first, I think he played about 10 league games, almost 1,000 minutes collective between both the league and the Canadian Championship. Very tidy on the right-hand side. But yeah, not having Waterman either is a tough one.
Yeah, I think the options for Tommy Wheeldon Jr. are a little more limited than he'd like. I'm sure he would have liked to have, you know, different things coming off the bench if he needed. But that being said, I think the key pieces are still there. Mason Trafford's still there. Dominic Zator is still there. He can turn to Jose Escalante as a left back if he needs more, you know, fullback depth. So there's pieces. I think the back line isn't necessarily where I'd be concerned. It's how do you break down an impact team that likes to defend, that likes to play on the counterattack. That will be down to Jordan Brown, Dominic Malanga, Sergio Camargo, possibly Nico Pasquadi if he's played a little bit more advanced. And then beyond that, it becomes a battle of kind of individuals on the field. Like, the thing about the Whitecaps is, like, there was no real standout player besides maybe Ali Adnan, who has been decent throughout the season, has been pretty decent at
times.
And
I would argue just kind of like...
But just didn't look good, yeah.
At the end of the second leg, like, yeah. Near the end of the game, was finally getting on, like, making some good passes.
So if you're Cavalry, you really want Piatti to have a similar sort of fate, just having a rough series against you, but... it'll really come down to difference makers. And I think Cavalry has enough difference makers with now a little bit of experience on the stage to potentially cause a second upset in a row. A cup set, as you put it.
A cup set, absolutely. First leg set for Wednesday at 7:30. Again, that's at Stade Saputo in Montreal. Switching to another cup competition, Forge FC, Antigua GFC. Forge taking down their Guatemalan opponents 2-1, rather. At Tim Hortons Field and set to play in Guatemala on Thursday.
Yeah, you were in Hamilton for that game, Marty.
I was, yeah.
What was an interesting, a little bit different than we're used to for a CPL action, but what was that like for the onlookers?
Well, for one, the atmosphere was different because there was quite a number of like Guatemalan fans, and Bobby Smirnionis, Forge head coach, brought that up after the game, and I thought it was worth noting because, yeah, it just made things just a little bit different. Otherwise, I think that Forge lined up, you know, pretty much as they normally would for a league game, looking to control possession and, obviously getting that late winner from David Chouanier's first goal, for Forge. I think he's been very impressive. He was impressive in that game as well. But yeah, I think that Forge generally approached it the same way as they would a league game in the way that they lined up and tried to approach things. And just like in the league, you know, sometimes they can give up kind of those goals on
mistakes
the break.
Yeah. Preventable goals.
As we saw in that first goal that just kind of like looped over top of Tristan Henry from distance. But I thought they were good value for the win.
Yeah,
really
definitely. I think so too. The one thing that I was taken by was kind of the storylines, the narratives that emerged. Chouanier actually joined Forge ahead of a loan option elsewhere. I believe Ottawa Fury was one of the possible teams. And his agent at the time said that he thinks that playing for Forge will give his player, David, a better shot at demonstrating himself on a bigger stage, like the CONCACAF League or CONCACAF Champions League or whatever. And that's exactly what happened. Mm-hmm. He stepped up to the moment. He scored a nice little late winner. And, I mean, kudos to him. I think, like we just mentioned, the preventable goal might be something that comes to bite them back on the second leg. They're in Guatemala on Thursday. So we'll see. I mean, it's advantage Forge. It might be narrow, but... all you really have to go there is get a win or a draw, and you're good. That being said, I think Guatemala is a whole other world for Forge. It'll be the very first time that a CPL team travels to a CONCACAF away game like this, and it'll be a good test.
Yeah, maybe my one worry for Forge FC was that they did have a bit of trouble generating, you know, decent scoring opportunities in the first half. You know, the Antigua was trying to kind of sit back on them and give them some trouble. And that could, you know, manifest itself at a greater level in Guatemala, especially because apparently it's going to be raining all week there.
Oh,
yeah.
Brutal.
I think
in our
preview on campiel.ca, I believe the pitch could be possibly squishy.
Squishy?
Yeah.
Well, they're playing at the National Stadium in Guatemala, and they're not playing at their natural home stadium. So that's maybe something of an advantage for Forge, that who knows how many traveling fans will travel. I think it's like an hour and a half from their original city.
Which capacity there is like 9,000. This one, it's over 20,000,
yeah.
25,000.
But then you
like
got to imagine, like, just general soccer fans in the region will probably just want to, like, be there, mm-hmm. just to terrify the Canadian visitors. Do you know what I mean? Like, I don't... do we have a bad reputation? I don't know.
We'll have to ask the Forge.
If it was an American team, you know that stadium would be packed with, like, people just there to, like, kind of make it a rough night. But I wonder what they think of... What do people from Guatemala think about Canadians?
Armin wants to do a straighter. He wants to go down there and ask everybody in Guatemala City, what do you think about Canadians?
What is your opinion on Canadians?
I can't believe we made it this far without mentioning the moves that Forge made on Friday as well.
It's almost like it was by design.
Okay, so back-to-back moves. Emery Welshman recalled from FC Cincinnati and then released to pursue opportunities
signed
elsewhere.
By, yeah, Israeli club Apoel Haifa in the Israeli league. So I think he made a really smart career move for him going international. I mean, this is kind of what we wanted from the Canadian Premier League is give our players a platform, have them exhibit their talents and their strengths and move on to you know, Europe or wherever they'd like to pursue their careers. And, you know, in his limited time in the CPL, Welshman was an important part of Forge FC's attack.
Oh, very important.
Yeah, something like, I don't know, 4 goals, 2 assists, 3 assists, something like that. He was involved in the front foot of Forge's attack. But that being said, I mean, Bobby Smyrniotis has options. And now the door opens up for guys like Chouinard or guys like Cadel Thomas, Marcel Zajac, Anthony Novak's probably back in the picture now. So that center forward position, things can move around. They have options. The other move, though,
yes.
This is a big one.
Yes.
Is, David Edgar.
David Edgar, Canadian international, coming to Forge FC.
It's a pretty significant, I would say, acquisition by Forge. Shoring up, like we mentioned earlier, those kind of mistakes, the preventable goals. Edgar brings a lot of experience, but there are question marks. He was in a freak car accident that kind of injured his knee, and so he's been trying to bounce back from that. He was in England for a little while longer, and he's finally decided to join the Canadian Premier League. I think David Edgar was sort of in the rumor mill for Valor at preseason.
Yeah, yeah, he was. But then he ended up staying in England and finished the year with Hartlepool. Yeah, and now it's kind of coming over now. Obviously, with the injuries, he had an opportunity to maybe go to the Gold Cup as well, but obviously with the injury, that hampered that.
I think the acquisition of more Canadian internationals like David Edgar raises the profile of the league anyways, so there is already a net benefit. But I think if you can get a healthy David Edgar, I think Forge was lacking a little bit of veteran experience, the way Cavalry sort of can rely on certain players like Trafford and Ledgerwood. I mean, if you look at Forge's lineup, Kyle Becker has experience, but he's 28. So now that you're adding, you know, 32-year-old David Edgar, he's got this kind of he's traveling with the team to Guatemala. So you've already got this, you know, hardened international player who has been through the trenches, and he can help this young team really find their feet in a place that's not necessarily comfortable. So I think net benefit overall, you know, you've given your attackers off the bench the opportunity to become starters, and they've already shown that they can. I think guys like Cadel Thomas, David Chouinard, like these guys have the skills to start, and then you've improved your back line. So I think, as I wrote, net positive, they come out on top out of the whole ordeal. And again, best of luck to Emery Welshman, who's the first CPL player who's, you know, moved on to bigger pastures elsewhere.
Switching to CPL play, one game in the long weekend, HFX taking down Valor 1-0 in a triumphant return to Wanderers grounds. Finally coming
after
back.
After 18,000 something kilometers of travel.
Just an unbelievable 2-week road trip.
Just a quick little saunter through Canada.
And back.
And
of
back.
Course,
a lot.
Of course. Matthew Arnone tipping home the winner there in the only goal of the match. But I think we got to talk about what happened in the 90th minute and after. Some fireworks at Wanderers grounds.
Should it have been the only goal of the match? That's the question.
Yes. So, yeah, we'll start with the penalty shout. Obviously, Valor coming in. The storyline was back-to-back games, 90th plus minute penalty, saves their game, you know, gives them a point.
Twice in a row.
Yeah, twice in a row. So heading into this one, Petrasso had another great game. Michael Petrasso, he scored the last penalty that that gave them a draw against Pacific FC. He gets taken down in the box by Zella Langwa and possibly a little bit by Christian Ochsner, and no call. I think it was a penalty.
I think so too. I don't think we disagree on this one. It's one of those situations where you have to look at it and you have to feel bad for Valor, because that penalty would have been, let's say, the third rescued result had it been scored. And so that's the kind of momentum swing that this club needs. But now they're 11 games without a win. And that's not to say that, you know, a club should be happy just relying on late penalties to rescue points. But the onus is on Rob Gale's team to turn this around and actually start getting wins. But that becomes so hard when it starts to feel like the world is against you. And so some manager, we talked about this last week, Marty, where, you know, Rob Gale might be doing the Mourinho, where it's like us versus them. And you can really internalize and look outward and kind of antagonize the rest of the world. That can motivate. And that is a useful, you know, tool for a coach to turn to. But at the same time, there comes a point where it's like, you know, you just have to kind of cross your fingers and hope for a lucky bounce or two as well. I think it was a penalty. Like, looking at the replay, and I think Rob Gale after the game was, before he even did his press conference, he busted out a phone and was showing reporters. And he was just like, yo, this is what we're talking about, right? Like, let's just be very clear. Let's all watch it so that we all have a like view of what happened.
Open up that one soccer app. Yeah. Hold on.
Yeah.
Before we get started.
But so I think he's right to feel like aggrieved in the sense that like his team probably should have been awarded a penalty. But that being said, like at the same time, you have to look at it as like a whole game picture. Valor didn't do enough to, I think, create as many opportunities as they should have. This is not the most informed HFX team. They're coming off the back of a lot of, you know,
five straight losses.
So there was an opportunity for you to really stamp out a win. You were coming off the back of two games where you've rescued late results. So you should already be feeling somewhat confident in yourself. And then, of course, once that all happens, once that all goes down, you know, it's tempers flare. And then I think that's what we saw.
And yeah, just as the minute struck 90 there, Jordan Morrell, frustrated, I believe, with a non-call, ended up touching the referee, got a straight red, and as he left the pitch, you know, showed his frustration. Obviously, the team hadn't won in
11 games
at that point, ended up kicking a scorer's table. Credit to Jordan in a way for owning up to it, went on Twitter immediately and posted a note. But
apologizing for the incident.
It's
an unfortunate series of circumstances, and obviously it's not the best look for him. He's the captain of this team and he has to lead by example, so I think in that sense he knows that that was not appropriate conduct. I'm sure Canada Soccer will take a look. It's likely, as the One Soccer crew said, that there will be a probably some sort of multi-game sort of disciplinary action taken against them. We don't know yet. That's Canada Soccer's decision. But the combination, as you mentioned, of, you know, putting your hand on a referee, which is a new rule that is completely, like, now it's like a strict straight red card, coupled with his frustrations. And then ultimately you got to look at it as like the big picture. I know we've said it again, but like it's frustrating to be Valor right now, because it just seems like everything's kind of going against you. It's going to take a lot of creative coaching from Rob Gale to get to the root of whatever this is and try to solve it. I think they're approaching a point in the fall where mathematically things are starting to look really difficult. I mean, they're not statistically out of it, but it's going to be very, very hard for any sort of turnaround. But that being said, like, anything is possible in sports. So you could inspire a turnaround that might have you back in that mix. And I think that's really the consolation for them right now, is how do you see out the rest of the season in the sort of, with the sort of character and the sort of respect that Rob Gale has always asked his players to demonstrate. So it's rough goings in Winnipeg right now, but they've got the support behind them to do good things. And I think this isn't the last we've seen of them.
Of course, Valor drew Pacific 2-2 on Wednesday, another late penalty. Petrasso finishing that one. But let's talk about Pacific quickly. Again, scoring goals at will. Lucas McNaughton with a great header, but then, you know, McNaughton ends up bringing down a Valor player to give up that penalty. Tough goings again for Silberbauer, I guess, right?
Yeah, you have to kind of feel for him, because I think his team has done, he's kind of gone through the same like kind of issues as both HFX and Valor, is that he's not really finding form and he's got injuries to deal with. So there's a little bit of both. But he's done a good job of managing all of that and at the very least mitigating some of those problems. He's also been a little luckier, I think, than the other two in both respects. So he's seen a lot of his players step up. Taron Campbell continues to be a threat, and Lucas McNaughton's back in that back line. Starro's back as well. So we're starting to see Pacific kind of express themselves. And then as they posted, or as Marcel De Jong posted, he's nearing a return from injury as well. He says he's approaching the finish line. So
that'd be great
him,
to see him by the end of the year. Like,
I think, you know, a handful of games for De Jong would be a really nice way to end off Pacific's campaign for the year. And hopefully they'll have Marcus Haber back in the mix as well. So they're getting going, I think. Pacific is, I think, got what it takes to at least challenge for third now. If a couple things go their way, and you know, they're a longer term project anyways, because unlike some cities like Alberta, like in Alberta or in Ontario, there's not really been a professional soccer scene on Vancouver Island. So they're a long-term play as they build out their training center, as they continue to establish their club. These are the sort of days where you can start to see a little bit about what Pacific's going to be. And I think there's more positives than negatives on the island.
Switching to that CPL top four, which I think we'll get into a little bit later, FC Edmonton ended up beating Halifax 2-0 on Wednesday. Easton Ongaro with a header, and then Tomi Amiobi finishing the penalty right after. But story's really Ongaro. Mm-hmm. He's kind of coming into form here. Two goals in as many games.
Local kid. Mm-hmm. Comes good. You love to see it, don't you, Marty?
Yes, and he is very tall.
Yeah, well... He brings other skills than tall.
Obviously, yes, yeah, yes. Two very composed headers, especially the one on Wednesday, Asua whipping the ball in there. And yeah, I mean, just Edmonton kind of finding the difference makers at this point, right?
Yeah, I think Edmonton's really started to express themselves in the right ways. We're starting to see what Jeff Paulus was alluding to in terms of the sort of attacking makeup. We've touched on this before in previous episodes, the tactical shift. We actually spoke to Jeff Paulus about the tactical shift born out of what he saw out of his squad, which is a sign of an astute manager, I'd say. I'll turn it around on you, though, Marty. Do you start Ongaro moving forward? I mean, that's sort of the question that Paulus is now facing. It's like you have Amiobi, you have Omar Diouk, you have Ongaro, who's capable of finding form. What's the kind of makeup here?
I think you have to play him with Amiobi and then play Diouk on the wing, mm-hmm. like Paulus did on Wednesday. Also, because I also like the way that Ongaro kind of... presses. He's not the fastest player. He's a lot like Thomas Skubak for HFX. You know, he's a decent enough, he's a big body, decent enough to press, and he was winning the ball high up the pitch, which was important. I think you have to play him and Tomi together.
Yeah.
That's the thing, is there is a way to fit all three players in. So.
Totally. And it's not necessarily 4-3-3 either.
Yes, exactly.
Which is interesting. Because mm-hmm. so much of Edmonton's talk at the beginning of the season was 4-3-3 soccer. And somehow they've ended up with all three strikers in this kind of 4-4-2 with high wingers. I'm not really...
But, well, so the other thing about playing Diouk on the wing, too, is that if you're going to play a 4-4-2, I think that Edmonton's biggest strengths are those fullbacks. Mm-hmm. Asua and then Alan Zebby played the opposite on Wednesday.
Totally.
But those players have been fantastic defensively as well. So I think that if you're going to put any player, like, you know, any kind of taking a chance on an offensive player, I think on those wingsters is a good spot.
Yeah, definitely. And then he has other options. Defensive midfield is pretty solid between Ramon Soria, Bruno Zebby. He's got options, so I think he can experiment a little, which is interesting to see. I think Edmonton has done a good job of mitigating any sort of skepticism about them. That spring season, they took a little while to get going, but I think now in the fall, they're definite contenders. And if they can string together a nice little 3 or 4 game winning streak, then they can seriously be in the conversation. I mean, it's not just York 9. It's not just Forge. Cavalry's been doing great as well. I think that's sort of what the top four has emerged with Pacific, a potential spoiler to that charge. But I think it'd be fascinating to see Edmonton versus Cavalry in that CPL championship. So make it interesting for us, Jeff. Make it happen.
Marty's Three Questions is back, but before we get into that, Armin, I'd like to make two mentions. The first one is, a couple weeks ago, one of my three questions was, you know, when Valor started making their additions, bring on Jose Galan and later Michel Paolucci, I asked, you know, what other team, you know, what other positions could we be looking at? And I said, I think Ford should bring in a defender. So I got that one correct.
Can we add the, like, applause sound effect here? Just add a nice, just a nice little clap.
And okay, I'll add it right here. You'll never know if I add it or not. But
sick.
And then second, Marble Olympics. They love us. We mentioned on Twitter.
They give us that clutch retweet. So CPLX Marble Olympics coming to a YouTube channel near you, potentially.
Yeah, Armin tweets about it, and then just
what,
like,
color
immediately.
Will we use the CPL logo colors as our team for
marbles? Oh, you'd have to. And you zoom in, and then you can see the logo.
That,
like,
would be sick.
Oh, yeah.
Okay, if you make marbles and you're a Canadian company, reach out to the Center Circle Live crew, because we have an order that you need to fulfill.
Oh, marbles, marble makers, get in touch. That is a mouthful. Question number one, are you buying this top four CanPL thing? Steven Sandor wrote a piece on CanPL.ca, you know, saying that the matches between the top four in this league are going to define the fall season, the top four being Cavalry, Forge, Edmonton, and York 9.
Am I buying it?
Do you think that's...
I think so. I think we just talked about it too, but I think that's sort of what the fall season has emerged. Pacific is the only team that can, I think, make a crack at it, but I think based on the way things are going, that will probably be the top four. Really, the conversation is about Cavalry in a weird way, because they're still top of the league. They're still, you know, chugging along, and they don't need to be, which is another thing. I think they really want that home field advantage in whatever leg they want it to be. And then it's a case of, can anybody knock Cavalry off their post, basically?
Well, the top four thing is interesting to me because, you know, okay, who's going to take down Forge? Is it going to be Edmonton? Maybe they've already beat
them.
Could
be York 9.
But York 9, we've yet to see them play Forge in the fall season. Mm-hmm. You know, this sort of like new York 9.
New York 9.
I didn't mean it like that. But that's the thing. Is it a top four? Is it a top two?
It's possible that we might end up with, you know, two Albertan clubs versus two Ontario clubs at the very end for those points. It's understandable in the sense that these are two soccer-rich regions of the country. But for now, I think that's the way the conversation's gone. Beating Forge might be a little difficult for, let's say, Edmonton and York over the course of six games or however many times they meet. But all that being said, I mean, there's no clear favorites like there was in the spring, you know? I think in the spring, it became a two-horse race very quickly. Pardon the pun. It was Cavalry and it was Forge. But now there's more options. And I think even Pacific, like, I wouldn't rule them out. I think once you get Haber back in the mix, I mean, it's very possible that they make a nice little run as well. So there's more options and there's more games, which gives us a bigger sample size. So I would buy it. I would say that this is the top four, but with the caveat that nothing is set in stone.
Mm-hmm. Question two. Kind of a general question, but where does David Edgar slot in with Forge? I mean,
ooh, good question.
How do you see them lining up if he is traveling with them to Guatemala?
He's not a goalkeeper, so not there. he'll play center back. It's just a matter of who does he replace, Dominic Samuel or Daniel Crutzen? Or I think Crutzen's more of a fullback that's been utilized at center back. And then same with Bertrand Awundi is another option.
So, Awundi has been coming into great form, which, you know, I think, tough.
Well, the thing with Edgar is he's got height, which is what they don't have in their back line. Mm-hmm. So you look at a guy like Dominic Samuel, like, I appreciate the hustle, but, you know, he's not the tallest center back. He doesn't look like a traditional center back in terms of his frame.
So played right back in the first leg there.
So I think Dominic Samuel is probably the player that I would swap out. But that being said, though, David Edgar would also potentially, you know, have the kind of experience needed to play at defensive midfield the way Nick Ledgerwood did. I don't think that David Edgar is necessarily an out-and-out center back in the sense that he's always had good passing range, so there's always been that. And he's got the kind of physical presence to do damage in that midfield too. So really, it depends on what Smirnyar's needs. I think he's never really had a concrete starting 11. So
Especially at the back.
So I think just to keep things simple, he'll want to play him at center back, and I think it'll be him and Awundi with Crutzen and or Frano on the right and you know, Awu on the left. Awu can play defensive midfield too. My goodness.
Yeah, I would. I'm curious if maybe, you know, did you play Daniel Crutzen as one of the fullbacks, Awu as another fullback, and then have Edgar and a Woundy up the middle. I think that's maybe their best.
Or you could do like 4-3-3 or 3-4-3 or something, where you play three at the back, and then you put Edgar, Samuel, and a Woundy together,
and have Edgar kind of move up maybe a little bit. Yeah. And that's not even mentioning like Giuliano Frano. Yeah. But like unbelievable season so far.
And then that's the other thing is like, all right, great. Like, you change up the back line, but you have so many attacking pieces that can fit in so many different places that doesn't even really change anything for you. Forge is kind of stacked, which is a good problem for Smirnyar to have. We'll let him decide, obviously. We don't get to decide. We can only project our starting lineups. But
yeah, maybe we'll see in Guatemala.
We will see in Guatemala.
Okay, question three. Since the CPL is now going back to Montreal, what's your go-to attraction in Montreal, Armin? I ask this because I'm going to Montreal this summer, so nice. I'm curious to know.
What's my go-to?
It could be food. It could be
Saint Viateur bagels.
Okay.
That's always a classic. You got to hit up the smoked meat. Everyone, like, Schwartz is like kind of the touristy place to go to. But apparently across the street is an even better place. Okay. Or so I've heard. I've only ever had Schwartz, which makes me a tourist.
Just immediately calling yourself out.
I saw a video produced by Bon Appetit on YouTube, where a guy goes to Montreal and has 10 different poutine places, and then he compares them all. So I would say watch that video and then just decide for yourself, or pick one of the 10. They're pretty even.
What am I deciding to do, 10
but
in a row?
From my experience, the best thing I've ever had in Montreal food wise is Joe Beef.
Dude. Yeah, I have heard about Joe Beef.
So if you can book a like nice table for two, find a date and enjoy your evening, because that place is killer.
Okay. Is that like the it's was that nice on like Maddie Matheson's?
Yeah, it's been
Vice
on that.
Thing?
It's
yeah.
been on it's been on like Ugly Delicious and a couple other TV shows.
Nice.
Bourdain visited when he was doing his trip of Quebec. So I mean, it's just one of those places that's like, you know, a cultural capital for Montreal food wise. Okay. And then I don't know, Montreal's like a fun city at night, but it's like Toronto, you know, like in the sense that there's nightlife, but there's a little bit of anything for anybody. So I can't, I don't know. For me, I would try to find a nice kind of cool bar and hang out and enjoy a few drinks. But I mean, if you want to go to a theme park or something, I don't know. There's a bunch of stuff to do in Montreal.
Yeah, there is. Yeah. Yeah. I'm definitely going to try. I just looked it up today. You can do tours of Olympic Stadium. Go Expos.
Yeah, sure.
I loved the Expos growing up, so I need to see Olympic Stadium.
Wasn't there like a proposal for like a baseball team to like spend half their season in Montreal?
Oh,
I love that.
Yeah, so Tampa Bay would do like half and half.
That'd be interesting.
I loved it. Other people in the office, they didn't seem too big on that, but whatever. Yeah.
Bring back the Expos.
Yes. Okay. Well, we'll see you in Montreal. The Expos won't be playing, but the Impact will be taking on Cavalry FC. Again, that's 7:30 p.m. On One Soccer on Wednesday night. And then just after that, on Thursday, Forge FC taking on Guatemala's Antigua GFC.
So as we approach these two non-CPL games, you know, Canadian Championship, CONCACAF League, I think it's important that even though our points don't really go up on that One Soccer predictor board, we should still give our takes. No,
yeah
let's
okay.
do it.
Yeah,
what do you think? Montreal versus Cavalry, leg one.
Okay, I think that's 1-1.
1-1.
I think Piatti scores, and then I mean, the way the Cavalry scoring, especially away from home, they're at BC Place, I think they're good for one there. And then I think it's probably gonna be like, I would hope 0-0 for Forge.
Yeah, I think 0-0 in Guatemala is probably
I'd say leaning towards that, especially like if David Edgar comes in, maybe he has a good game. That is obviously asking a lot, considering the crowd that's expected there, and obviously the it's been said time and time again how difficult it is to play down there. We don't know how CPL teams are going to fare, but I still think that's possible. But.
Yeah, and I think the way that, you know, the One Soccer crew sort of said is that Canada is expected to beat Guatemala on the international level, mm-hmm. so I think the quality gap is there, such that hopefully Forge will be comfortable. I think in the second half of that first leg, Forge looked like the better team anyways, so I think it'll be an extension of that. I'm going to go against the grain here. I'm going to say the Montreal Impact win this first leg. I'm going to say 1-0. And then take it back to Spruce Meadows and the story unfolds as it may. Let's just make it interesting.
Yeah. No, I was kind of leaning towards an Impact win.
I think Cavalry hasn't been humbled in a while. So I think it's a case of remotivating the boys to step it up at Spruce Meadows.
Okay, who will be right, Armin or myself?
We will find out.
Okay, see you next week.